Ahoy, fellow storm chasers.
And welcome aboard the Joy of Trek,
a wee podcast exploring the Emerald Isles and seaside towns of Star Trek.
All of it. I'm Cocky.
I'm Kay.
And deleting my romantic rivals is your chief engineer, Greg.
Together, we're on a mission through the local pubs of Star Trek to find the romantic in every hologram and the excellence in every episode.
Even the seasick Vulcans.
Because every episode must be someone's favorite, and it might as well be us.
So say 10 Our Fathers and call the doctor in the morning and join us as we dance a jig into
the joy of Trek.
Well done.
So, yes, welcome aboard. We are doing episode 611 of Voyager.
Yes.
Fairhaven.
Don't have the credits right in front of me. Got a little
first aired
script.
On first air date, written by writer, directed by director, and guest starring guest stars.
Well, the only thing I know about this is that this was the first episode to air in the new millennium.
Oh, yes.
Like 6th of January 2000. This is our first millennial one. But Chief, can you please fill in the credits for us?
Sure thing, Cocky. So this was aired on January 12th, 2000, written by Robin Bernheim and directed by Alan Croker.
Thank you. It's a bit early that we come to depend on our chief here.
Sometimes it happens.
So yes, as you may have guessed, it's that episode. It's Fairhaven. Oh, also missing a synopsis here. Oh dear. The division of labor is not quite as clear as we...
It has failed us a little.
Well, I think I have failed us a little, so...
While a Voyager is weathering out a space neutrino storm or something or the others, the crew decides to go on a collective holodeck fantasy... holodeck holiday.
Yeah.
And,
going on a holiday.
And enjoy a little seaside town in the middle of Ireland.
Yes. Well said. A seaside town in the middle of Ireland, yes. West Coast, East Coast kind of vibe.
Well, I believe there's a signpost at some point there, which, based on the directions that they're given on that signpost, would indicate that the town is somewhere in the middle of Ireland rather than on the coast in view of Dublin, as it is later on proclaimed.
Yes. And I think also, by the way, the sun is like setting or rising over the cliffs or whatever, like it's... That is a West Coast, but yes, Dublin is an East Coast city on... The island of Ireland.
I mean, it makes sense because, well, it was filmed on the Paramount backlot in apparently an area called Little Europe.
Oh, I read a lot about that on Ex Astra Scientia. Well, we have this overlap because you look for like external sources and perspectives. And I look for, you know, production trivia and Ex Astra Scientia, a fantastic source. But like... Not for this episode, but for another episode where a Voyager that was also using the same area, like, they've even gone to the detail of taking screenshots and then drawing arrows on the Google Maps.
Yeah. To see where it should be.
Where you were standing and where you'd be looking for each of those screenshots.
Excellent.
Right?
Well, this episode is right up our alley because it was not particularly well beloved.
And having just watched it, I... So disagree. I just love this episode. This is not going to be a hard one for me to love.
No, well, the Wired binge-watching guide suggests skipping this episode.
I mean, you can. You can, especially if you also bother to skip Spirit Folk.
Which aired 6 to 7 weeks later.
I noticed. Yeah, that's good, right? Because it will take about 6 to 7 weeks to rebuild, and yeah, there we go.
So, yes, Screen Rant ranked Fairhaven as one of the top 5 worst of the series. Noting it as an episode about holodeck malfunctions. There's no real malfunctions say.
That's nonsense. Because usually when there's a holodeck malfunction, someone's in peril.
Right.
And that's not what this episode's about.
Oh, absolutely not, no. So there was also some complaints about Irish stereotypes, uncompelling story and everything. But to end on a positive note, Sci-Fi included this episode in a group of Star Trek franchise episodes they felt were commonly disliked but deserved a second chance.
Hey, there we go.
There you go. That's I thought that was a nice way to round
well
up
done,
the little
yeah.
Bitching on the internet, as I would refer to this kind of exchange.
People are allowed to have their opinions, and we appreciate... Hey, there is a value to criticism, right? Critics who are balanced in their opinions. I know that Keith R. A. DeCandido on, I think, Tor.com does excellent reviews. We know him as the writer of some of the licensed Farscape fan fiction that bonus episode or the interstitial episode of that podcast.
Let's do a quick little technical detail.
Yes.
I say we eject the warp core.
Yes. Okay, so yours is technical.
Okay, well, it's more medical, really.
Oh.
At the beginning of the episode, when the wavefront is approaching, mm-hmm. Janeway instructs the doctor to inoculate the crew.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure you can't inoculate against radiation. Inoculation is what you do against vaccination. With vaccination, you bring in a little, a seed, something that the immune system of the body can latch onto and start pre-production on a remedy. I don't think that works for radiation. Like, here, have a little bit of radiation so you're better protected against more radiation.
Well, we'll cheaply stand by because we'll need a proper definition of this in a second, but I think inoculation is a superset of vaccination. Vaccination is a specific process where, indeed, you're exposed to a weakened
right.
or a less effective version, or even, like in the case of the new mRNA vaccines, just absolutely nothing at all.
No.
In order to trigger that response. But there are other ways of preparing yourself.
But taking iodine pills. That would not be inoculation.
Well, I don't know whether, if it's an internal prophylaxis, does that count as inoculation? Chief?
So this one's actually pretty interesting. I was aware of a little bit of this before, but it's just kind of nice to get a refresher on this as well. So inoculation was originally because of grafting smallpox lesions from people who are sick into people who are not sick, so that way the body would react to it and develop the antibodies basically from the other person onto them. That was a very big part of the American Revolution, was forcing the soldiers to get inoculated against smallpox to protect them better against getting sick than the British, who were not exposed to it, were, so they could stay healthy and keep fighting. However, vaccination is just any other delivery method that it does not derive from having that piece of material grafted onto you. Immunization really is the process of your body creating the antibodies and creating the protection against a disease, whereas vaccination and inoculation are the methods of delivery to begin the immunization process.
An internal prophylaxis.
The medication that's effective against contracting HIV,
PrEP, right.
is, PrEP stands for pre-exposure prophylaxis.
Okay. Yeah.
Right? And prophylaxis is a process of, protecting yourself against contact with pathogens.
Right.
Which can apparently also occur internally.
Oh, okay.
If I understand that correctly, because that's, that medication, whatever it's called, I'm not actually that familiar with it, but it's taken in tablet form.
Okay, yeah, no, I had no idea. So maybe I might be wrong.
You can't inoculate against radiation. Well, maybe you can't, Kay.
Oh, cracky.
But the doctor is actually, he's pretty advanced, and maybe it is possible.
It sounds like something you'd want to do standard, get your standard Starfleet inoculations then. Also,
it might have limited half-life and it might have side effects that you generally don't want.
Well, the doctor does say,
if you experience any dizziness, report to sick bay immediately.
Yeah, yeah.
Which Tuvok staunchly disregards.
Yes, I noticed that as well.
An excuse to get out of the conversation, he's just sitting there suffering in not quite silence, but
okay. Well, that's not a warp core, though, is it?
No. Well, okay. It kind of is, but kind of isn't. I don't have any other. Yeah, no. Everything the technical. Yeah, whatever. It's Star Trek.
Okay, well, I've got one.
I say we eject the warp core!
It's pretty racist. It's pretty...
Oh, yes.
It's pretty racist and, historically revisionist and, really, really, really racist kind of...
At least there was no top of the morning.
Yeah. Oh, kiss of the morning to you. So very heavily, heavily stereotypical and, skipping over a lot of historical realities.
Oh, yes.
That things like... Oh, the road signs are in English and in Gaelic.
Yeah.
There would not be Gaelic on display during the heyday of British colonialism in Ireland.
Also, road signs like that didn't appear until the 30s or 40s of the 20th century or something.
And if this were a sort of creative reimagining of the past, Vic Fontaine's nightclub in DS9,
mm-hmm.
then you'd probably want to remove the English. You'd probably,
Right, yeah.
If this was a pure Irish fantasy,
yeah.
you'd want to kind of remove the English colonialist, imperialist influences
exactly,
a little bit.
Exactly, yes. Just a wee bit.
Just a wee bit.
Oh, cocky spoken like a true Irish person to just hate the English. Just, we don't need them. We can just get rid of the English, right?
And yeah, some of the dialogue is woof. Woof. The attempts at using, those quaint Irish sayings.
Yeah.
Okay, so I am of Northern Irish ancestry, and I spent a part of my childhood in Northern Ireland.
Belfast, right?
In that area, yeah. I'm not going to dox myself on here.
Okay. Well, you don't live there anymore, so.
No, but you know how it is in Northern Ireland, just where you live is already a political statement to a certain degree. It's certainly not as much as it used to be. But yeah, you know, quaint little things like, oh, a stranger is just a friend you haven't met yet. Yeah, those.
Yeah. Unless he's English.
Yeah, exactly. But that's not the kind of sayings that I remember learning from my aunts and uncles who were, you know, hairdressers and shipwrights. No.
No, that would have been more along the lines of petrol bombs work best before 4 o'clock on a Sunday.
Oh, wow. Not that one. Not that one. I don't recall. I do recall one. Which I think was lovingly said about either myself or cousin Robert the Gay, who was also a gay gentleman like myself, which is the typical Irish saying that, oh, that fella, yeah, if you fell into a bucket of tits, he'd roll out sucking a cock.
Oh, wow.
And hopefully that has been bleeped out a bit for our tender audience, but I think you get the idea. So anyway, we had this recommendation. Now that that's out of the way, we had this recommended to us by more than one person.
Oh, again.
So we've got two recommendations for this. I'll start with a short one, which comes from James. Thank you, James, who says, I keep it a secret, but I really like Fairhaven from Star Trek Voyager. I'm a huge Janeway fan, and she is really human in it, even a little vindictive when she says, computer, delete the wife.
Yeah. Peter, also him, US-born Swiss raised and a jazz pianist.
Oh, yeah.
You watched Farscape for the first time in the pandemic and fell in love with it, which was how I got into your Farscape podcast. Yes, yay. We've mentioned that before. We used to do a Farscape podcast. But
called So Farscape.
But we ran out of Farscape, so.
Yeah, well, you know, it had an ending, which is.
I also came to Star Trek late, and during the pandemic, I had the idea, funnily enough, to making a podcast going through lesser-loved episodes of Star Trek and sharing my love for them through pop culture analysis and fun little mundane obscurities that are lost on modern audiences. I like that stuff. Anyway, you can imagine my excitement when you guys decided to make this podcast. I was like, oh, man, a Trek podcast about the mundane episodes. Exactly what I've been waiting for.
Oh, excellent.
So he recommended Fairhaven, saying, honestly, I can't quite put my finger on it why I like it. The only thing I can think is that I just have a strange soft spot for what I like to call low-budget, old-school, Hollywood-esque set design or some such. I always like it in all the shows, really old Hollywood movies, where they try to do historical fiction or fantasy, and the set design feels very small, quaint, and warm somehow.
Yeah.
As though it's an idyllic version of a time which all its idiosyncrasies and cultural references trapped in a snow globe.
Wow.
Well, that's very much of a description. Of a holodeck, I tell
you. You're a poet, Peter.
Oh, they always have a certain feel that I can't quite put my finger on. It's just quaint and cozy in an old school and naive way. The other thing about this episode, which frankly is constant in most holodeck episodes, is the oddly specific cultural references that relate more to the time than the show was made than to the past it's trying to portray.
Yes.
Let alone some people of the distant future and their views of the past. I really like that. It's a strange, convoluted time capsule. The Voyager crew, of course, seems to show at home with it all as well. Again, it's a wonderful feeling of naivete that comes through on the part of the writing and the era in which the show was produced that I really enjoy.
Oh, that's a really nice perspective.
Yes, thank you very much for this recommendation.
Because, yeah, at this point, like, Voyager came out so long ago. Like, the premiere of Voyager is now older, as we record this, than the premiere of, like, Star Trek the original series was when Voyager first came out.
Ouch.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. Yes.
That's, woof.
Ugh.
Yeah, I'm the young one in this podcast. Even I felt that one. Oof.
Actually, that makes it really interesting because, yeah, these stereotypes that we see of the Irish culture seen through the American-Irish perspective. Yes. And, like, we do better than that now.
Yes, well, back in that day, around that time, the Irish were just making a transition from the bomb people to the Riverdance people.
Yes, yes. Eurovision 96, I do believe.
And 96, yeah.
And much, much more importantly, the Good Friday Accords of 97, yes. We'll see if the unification of 2024 that Data mentioned
will actually be
will come to pass. Also, I'm not entirely sure if he said unification or reunification.
Ooh.
Because if it's unification...
I believe unification.
Then we don't know what they're going to unify with. You know, there's a possibility that you'll have the unification of Ireland and Greenland into a new...
Possible. Unlikely, you know, but possible.
The Emerald Empire.
Well, in that case, the North Pole is in for a surprise.
So, regarding that episode, there was a BBC article that came out actually March 2nd talking about that moment of the Irish unification, where the writer of that episode, Melinda M. Snodgrass, basically wasn't even aware of the controversy because, as she says, quote, writing for television is like laying track down for a train that's about 300 feet behind you. You don't have time to stop. So the episode was originally broadcast in 1990, but it wasn't broadcast in the UK until Sky TV broadcasted an edited version, removing that scene entirely in 1992. And BBC Archives maintains the only time that the episode The High Ground was ever aired in the UK was on September 29th, 2007. So that episode is banned in the UK. Let's let Data say the line himself that had everyone up in arms.
Yet there are numerous examples when it was successful. The independence of the Mexican state from Spain, the Irish unification of 2024, and the Kenzie Rebellion.
Yes, I'm aware of them.
I think we can jump right in.
Yes, let's go to work.
We open with Tom Paris meandering away, looking around proudly through the Irish little village of Fairhaven.
Fairhaven, yes, with rolling hills of Ireland CGI'd into the background quite successfully.
So, where are you heading?
Sullivan's. Care to join me?
I wish I could, but there's a bit of a problem.
Paddy O'Sullivan. Oh, no, wait. O'Sullivan was the other one, and he's probably... I don't know. This is Seamus, not Paddy.
This would be Seamus.
There ain't a single Paddy in the entire episode, is there?
No, and I think he'd be called Parig, if there were. That's the Irish form of the name Patrick.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Hmm. I guess Paddy's was more of like a English way of referring to Irish people.
Well, it was an epithet. It was an insult, you know. Yeah. Mickey as well, even though Mickey in Irish slang usually means penis.
Oh, okay. Are you taking the mick?
Wow. Ooh, I don't know. I think that might be Cockney rhyming slang, which is a different source. Interesting questions.
Apparently he's always in need of 2 shillings, either to spend the night somewhere else because his wife killed him out, or buy his wife a new parasol because they made up again.
Well, considering that he sings the praises of his wife and then also tries to sort of put the moves on Seven later on.
Oh, yes.
And, you know, those 2 shillings that he needs, they go straight to the pub. This man is one of those charming, philandering alcoholics that we all seem to find charming back in this day and age. He does have a lovely hat, though.
He does.
I had something about this actor. Oh, yes. Richard Reilly also played Bataille in The Inner Light and Jeremy Lucas in The Augments in Enterprise.
Oh, so, again, a recurring actor.
He's one of those, you know, that guy. Actors,
yes.
Definitely seen him in other things, couldn't really place it. He does a sort of leprechaunic job of representing an Irish person.
Yes. Kim is looking very dapper in a tailored suit, I guess. He's wearing a straw hat. I guess he's more of an English.
One of those barbershop quartet outfits.
Oh, yes, kind of, yes.
25% of a barbershop quartet is what Harry is, and he's talking to Maggie.
A word to the wise. Stay away from Maggie O'Halloran. She's promised to a pig farmer with a very large rake. Does she have a sister? Wooden teeth.
Which is always a fun thing to say about someone.
Yeah.
Like, is there a convenient substitute?
It's a pig farmer with a very big rake.
Yeah. And the substitute has wooden teeth, or as you would say in Irish, I wouldn't ride her if she had pedals.
He asked Tom to maybe fix that, but no, he will not have it. There will be no changes to the program.
He wanted to keep everything authentic. Well then, Tom,
have we got news for you?
Tommy boy, let me inform you about some of your hits and misses. For example, the complete absence of tobacco.
Oh, yes. Yeah, I mean, I guess smoking would have been fairly common, almost standard at that point.
Yeah. That would be absolutely the norm. And the inn, the Ox and Lamb, that's an English naming convention. Irish,
right.
You know, places of hospitality tended to be named after the owner, such as Sullivan's. That
right, yes. That's the inn. We never actually see the inn.
Don't we?
There's never an inside shot. I mean, there might be at someone
there.
Some,
that's no. Where Sullivan, yeah, that's where Michael Sullivan goes to drink. He doesn't drink in his own pub.
Oh, is that right?
I think so. I'm not entirely sure.
I thought that was
so.
At the ring. Never mind.
No, you're quite right.
I think
right.
Neelix has taken over the pub at that point, allowing Michael to sit and drink.
Yep.
Because he never drinks anyway. Like, he'd been off the wagon for 15 years. On the wagon? I don't always forget which one. Oh, if you fall off the wagon. So if you're the wagon, then you're not drinking, right?
Yes, exactly. Having the relationship with alcohol that you prefer. There are some spelling errors. Killaloo is misspelled. Tomb Granny is misspelled. And yeah, County Clare is nowhere. I mean, it's just a geographical oddity. So, Tom...
It's kind of like one of those GTA maps, you know, where which kind of feels like all of California and Nevada, but it's only you can drive across it in 5 minutes.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. I once shot... photographed, I should really emphasize for those who don't know that I'm a photographer, I photographed a wedding in the neighborhood of San Diego and then took a ride with our friend Brian down to San Jose. And that drive, it was a long-ass drive.
Yeah.
But it felt like doing the north to south drive from Grand Theft Auto 5.
Yeah.
Like down to the sort of shrubbery and the change in tone of the mountains.
They do a wonderful job of condensing those environments to...
Yeah. There's even cars on fire on the side of the road, which really puts you in the spirit of things.
Yeah.
Yeah, Chief Engineer Greg here. I just have to say that my years of playing just Spider-Man video games and just video games take place in New York actually came in handy when I got lost in New York. And I was like, okay, wait, that's there, which means that where our hotel is over there. And that's able to lead us back into the right direction. I'm still pretty proud of that. I know roughly how to orient myself because of that. So like there's honestly some real world application to that. Sometimes gotta stress that.
I wonder, we have no way of answering this. If you were going to design this program, right?
Yeah.
Would you have it run one-to-one in terms of time, or would you do some time compression? Would you have it run on like a 12-hour day instead of a 24-hour day? So you get a few more sunrises and sunsets, because you can only go there when you're off shift, right?
Yes.
But then you couldn't talk about like tomorrow and this afternoon. You can make those appointments.
Kind of, but it'd be tricky. But yeah, it'd be easy to miss a few days because when you've got a late shift and you've got sleep, and then at that point the program's already 3 days down.
Yeah.
So,
okay,
tricky.
Now you probably
on the other hand, you might want to have a slight offset, so not you don't always show up at the same time.
That's what I'm thinking.
Yeah.
Then again, maybe some people like that.
Yeah. So, as they are having their little talk, the doctor arrives on his bicycle.
He's wonderful.
He's got a carbit lamp on the front of his bike, which I thought was, like, rather charming.
Oh, yeah. I wonder if that's period appropriate.
Sounds about... I mean, actually, but this is supposed to be... I think that bike might be a little bit too modern for when this is supposed to be. This is, like, mid-19th century or something?
Yeah.
Yeah. So the bike might be a little bit too modern for that time, but...
I noticed that he's stepping on the bike, like he's not actually riding it.
Oh, yeah. Well, he's wearing a smock, you know, it's like...
Yeah. Because he's the local pastor.
Yes, he is taking his part very seriously.
I'll need to leave no later than 1300 hours.
Medical emergency?
Not exactly. I'm working on my homily for Sunday's Mass, and I expect both you sinners to be in attendance.
As he always does.
Yes.
Because this is his natural habitat as a hologram, right?
Yeah, I suppose so, yeah.
The idea of a malleable world and having to, like, invent yourself as a person, that's what he does all the time. That's his whole life experience. The way that this is staged, you know, he climbs up the stairs, and as Tom and Harry are distracted by Maggie again, he sort of thumps the railing.
Yeah.
This is how we're introduced to Fairhaven. We go to the credits, which, on Voyager, I never skip.
Nah. There's actually a teaser which nothing really happens. It's like there's no foreshadowing, there's nothing about, you know, things that might go wrong. At this point, it's just like literally just setting the scene.
And really nothing does go wrong. Yeah, I know there's the neutrino storm and this is lost, and there are some stakes, but mostly this is a show about feelings.
Yeah.
And really exploring them and like having some joy and, as Peter said, some mundanity. And I'm so here for it. I absolutely love this episode. Because we open on a busy pub.
Paris is running a book on a arm wrestling match between Kim and the local championship.
Everybody, place your bets.
Three bob on Liam.
Three bob it is.
Which Seamus is betting on, I notice, with Tom's money.
Two bob? Is that 2 shilling? Right, yes.
Oh,
I think a bob is a shilling.
By the time that I lived in the UK, the money had already been sort of decimalized and made a lot more sense. I don't know if a bob is a shilling, because it could be a guinea or a...
Oh, I mean, he wouldn't have
or a
guinea.
Or a...
He wouldn't have 2 guineas to bet on if he has to...
Or a halfpenny or a threepenny or a sliver.
I think a bob is a shilling.
or a fan cat or a... you can just yell any sort of combination of syllables, right? And it's probably going to be our nickname for English coinage.
That'll be two twats and a fart, please.
There you go, getting in the spirit of things. Initially, the pastor is making quite a significant bet on Harry's opponent.
Yes.
Tom, like, sets him straight and then, okay, fine, Walt.
5 shillings on Liam.
You're going to hurt Harry's feelings.
Oh, very well. 2 shillings on Mr. Kim, and I'll pray for a miracle.
Which Harry wins with a bit of effort. He actually comes back from a rather large impending loss.
Yep.
He's got quite something to make up, but he does actually win, much to the doctor's joy.
I knew you could do it, Ensign.
This is what the captain walks in on.
Yes.
In her uniform, which nobody seems to mind.
That seems to be a default holodeck thing, unless it's required for the plot. Then they go, oh, what's the funny dressed gentleman, you know? But
yeah,
most of the time, they're just like, yeah, you're just ignored that fact that you're not wearing appropriate clothing.
And she bumps into Michael Sullivan there. Once was a man named Michael Sullivan. He had whiskers on his chin again. No, it really has to be Michael Finnegan. Who introduces himself? He's the barkeep of Sullivan's, handing out the drinks to the excited crowd.
What will it be?
I'm looking for some friends of mine.
And we're all friends here.
She has confidence in Harry. Michael calls her an optimist. She says, no, I'm a realist.
Realist, yes.
Well. And she sort of sings the praises of this place. This is a largely conflict-free example of just interaction between the crew as people, as humans sharing hobbies with one another. We get so many different combinations of people, like, talking to each other. There's not one particular relationship that's really examined.
No. Well, the only thing that's really examined is Janeway's and her relationship to O'Sullivan.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. I mean, that's the central core, and that's the only peril that there really is.
Yeah. The neutrino wavefront is just a beep at best. It's like almost entirely irrelevant.
Yeah, exactly. It's an excuse to do this.
Yeah, which is actually the reason that Janeway is in the pub. It's to grab the crew and get them out because we've got some work to do.
Yep.
Borg classification 3472, particle density anomaly.
Where'd it come from?
I believe it was formed by the collision of 2 neutron stars.
Oh, I love this set.
Oh, yes.
It always feels a little bit small, but at the same time, it feels huge. It feels small but tall, which makes sense in the 4x3 era of television.
Neutrino wavefront, which is approaching at 200,000 kilometers per second, and it extends for 3.6 light years, and they can't get it out of the way because it's not here yet, but it's already disabled our warp drive.
Yep, there's a Borg designation for it. She's familiar with it. And Janeway decides...
And we'll have to ride it out. We'll generate an inverse warp field and drop anchor. That should protect us from the turbulence.
So some modifications are needed, which we don't need to see. And we see, I like this little scene. Janeway's in Neelix's, right? She's in the mess hall, burning the midnight oil. Neelix shows up to remind her.
Yes, midnight's already come and gone.
And she goes, well, time for a break then. And she invites his company, which I just really love. You know, people are just open to one another.
Mm. Reminiscing a bit about bad weather when she was a child in Indiana, Neelix taking the opposite view.
We had some pretty nasty weather on Talax, too. I always enjoyed a good ion storm.
And he shares with his captain, as chief morale officer, some concerns about, well, the crew's not really used to doing nothing. And she asks him for suggestions.
Everyone seems to love Fairhaven. I was thinking we might initiate an open door protocol on the holodeck to keep the program running 24 hours a day, let people come and go as they please.
Which is great.
It doesn't cut into anybody's holodeck time.
I guess...
I seem to recall from the earlier seasons that that was fairly strictly rationed because of power requirements or something.
Yes, but I mean, Star Trek being Star Trek. Like,
yeah.
At the moment, they don't have like an energy deficit, it seems like. But also in other series or episodes, the holodeck seems to work while the rest of the ship doesn't because it has an independent power source that can't be linked to the rest of the ship, so you can't use it. Or
except right in this episode, they actually pull out power from the holodeck.
Whatever.
Yeah.
And Neelix says that...
I'm heading down there myself, if you'd like to join me.
But she says, no, I've got to work.
Yes.
And then instead...
She goes there anyway. Neelix is there because he is doing lunch in the Ox and Lamb tomorrow. And he wants to make preparations, and Janeway wanders into O'Sullivan's.
Yep, which is empty except for the proprietor, who offers her a cup of tea on her request.
Cream? I mean...
And the cream comes after. Pours the tea first and then puts the cream in, which
scalds
it.
You don't use cream in tea, you use milk.
I mean, I'm used to using milk, but I suppose you can use cream.
Yeah, I mean, I abhor it with anything but black tea, but so...
Fair enough. Everyone to their taste.
Although I have, like, when you get a cup of builder's tea at, like, some greasy little spoon on the Docklands in the UK, then, yeah, you kind of have to have put some milk in it, otherwise the tannins come out and fight you.
Well said. And they have a lovely little conversation.
I'm just passing through on my way home.
How long have you been on the road?
5 years. Almost six.
And then she has ancestors in Clare County, so he calls her Katie O'Clair.
Aye.
Which, I'm not exactly sure that that's... You know, the O prefix, I do believe that that means child of, or typically son of.
Oh.
That is an ancestor. Right. Chief, can you fill us in on that?
Yep, Kaki, you were spot on there. So the O prefix is derived from the Gaelic word O, meaning descendant of or grandson of. So really derived back from a noble ancestor. So you would say like O'Brien, meaning the descendants of Brian, in referring to the King Brian Boru. If I'm wrong on pronunciation of that, I'm so sorry. Very similarly, there's also Mick or Mac, M-A-C versus M-C. Same thing, it's just a Gaelic word for a patrilineal, so the son of. So O is descendant of or grandson of. It's a little bit more removed. Mac or Mick would be the direct descendant of, so the father would be whomever. So McLaughlin, McMahon, McTavish, whatever.
I'm looking forward to have heard that.
Yes. Yeah. It'll be about 6 or 7 weeks.
That will have been informative. This actor, let me see if I've got his name here, because he's a fantastic actor. He was in Game of Thrones, Sir Amory Lorch.
Was he a tall guy with dark hair and whiskers on his face?
Yeah. Oh, amazingly.
One of those guys, yeah.
Fintan McKeown, he was also in Waking Ned, or also known as Waking Ned Divine.
Oh,
it's a really fantastic film. It's one of those Irish comedies about elderly tax fraud.
Oh, okay.
Sort of.
A lot of that goes on in Ireland.
No.
I mean, as lottery fraud,
in fact.
Oh, right. Well, as we notice here, clearly, after the tea, he invites her to a game of rings, and they're clearly playing by Irish rules, because she calls him out on the fact that...
You stepped over the beer stain.
I did not.
You did too, by half a boot.
And he goes like, well, actually...
These boots are half a size too large, so in reality, my toes never crossed the line.
The line, yeah. She needs to get going. You know, she knows her duties, but he manages to tempt her, first with an invitation and then with a challenge, and it's the challenge that she responds to, and she's just having a great time.
Yeah, more arm wrestling, which this time it's her who's cheating by leaning her leg against the bar. And,
well, as she says...
Well, how else do you expect me to win?
She ends up grabbing his hands with two hands, and even then really can't do much more than hold on and...
Well, we call it a draw?
It's so cute. It's a little meet cute. And it's so nice to see her just having a good time and making a friend. Yes.
After she's had that little interaction, she notices that he's not entirely as she would like him to be. For once of all...
I was never one for reading.
And secondly...
Katie O'Clair, this is my wife, Frances.
Yeah. And he's a little short for her as well.
Yes.
Apparently 3 centimetres extra makes the difference for her. But it's interesting that she cites Jonathan Swift. Jonathan Swift is known for tackling the complex issue of Ireland as relates to British dominion through satire.
Yes.
Much like in the Netherlands, we had the writer Multatuli, who the issue of Dutch colonialism in Indonesia to the forefront for Dutch people.
Yeah.
Swift wrote A Modest Proposal, a pamphlet with a suggestion for what could be done with Ireland,
yeah,
which involved like farming Irish children to tan their skins into leather and like really, really...
It was brutal
satire.
Right, yes.
Which was by some taken seriously and considered. So A Modest Proposal is a... It's a really remarkable bit of writing. You read it now, it's almost impossible to imagine anyone taking it seriously, but yes, such is the way of colonialist oppression.
Oh. Yeah, gotta chime in here. I saw that firsthand in my class because there were quite a few people in my class where we read A Modest Proposal who really had no idea the horrors of British colonialism and didn't care to know about the horrors of colonialism. But there was a couple of us that did who were a little bit more like, ooh, yeah, and like we're preaching the satire. But I remember very clearly there was a couple of students who were just like, why would he suggest this? Why are we reading this? I don't understand. It's like, oh no.
After she says her goodbyes, because she's getting to work, the doctor is inoculating the staff against the radiation.
She's in a great mood.
Yeah, she's well and chipper. She like bears her throat to be injected as well.
She has a few suggestions for modification for Harry, and the doctor goes, well,
speaking of revisions, I was hoping I could give my character a more active role.
To which Paris suggested,
we could send Father Mulligan on a retreat to a nearby monastery where he takes a vow of silence and never speaks again.
Try it, says the doctor.
And you'll be saying Hail Marys till St. Patrick's Day.
I love this. These are fantastic conversations. This is colleagues who know each other's boundaries and pressure points.
Taking little playful pot shots at each other.
Because this is just banter, right? Yeah. This is crack in the Irish sense, you know. A good
right.
It doesn't really translate in the same way that the Dutch word gezellig doesn't really translate. No. Like when everybody's having a good time at a party, there is good crack.
Oh, okay, right.
C-R-A-I-C.
Ah, right.
All hands, this is the captain. Secure your stations and brace for impact.
Quick scene on the bridge where the initial wave front of the Iron Storm passes by without doing a lot of damage.
We've got a ruptured plasma conduit. Deck 9.
Send a repair team.
Yeah, I love that the captain waltzes onto the bridge and then go, how long do we have? 30 seconds.
That's cutting it mighty fine, man.
Yeah, you should. Like, either don't show up or do.
After which she decides to go for a quick little side trip to the holodeck research lab.
Yeah. I kind of love this set. It was always so shocking to see Voyager's holodeck be so different from what we were used to on the Next Generation. You know, on the Next Generation, it's a black environment with this yellow grid of lines.
Which are on the ground here, I noticed.
Oh, are they?
Yes.
If you see it
in one of the...
Oh, I see the yellow grid, yeah.
Yeah, in one of the later shots, you can see that there's a yellow grid on the floor. So
and here there's all this scaffolding on the walls and these cool lighting panels, which I think sort of sells the idea of complex machinery projecting these illusions a lot better.
Much more so than just a featureless room in which things just appear.
Yeah, because there are semi-canonical like explanations for how holodecks work.
Yeah, heart light or photons and force fields, as the doctor calls it in this episode.
Yep. But a combination of technologies, you know, projections on the wall that are perspective corrected for every viewer's eyes.
How would you do that? It means everybody would have their own private projection.
Yeah, essentially. Which smoothly combines with objects in the world, which can be replicated if you need to touch or interact with them.
Mm-hmm.
But also things like spatial compression occurs, because the space isn't huge, but people can walk away from each other.
Yeah.
At which point the floor sort of moves underneath them.
Yeah.
And as long as they don't have line of sight, that works fine. You can have just a spatially compressed wall in between them. But even if you do have line of sight, then there's, you know, an image of that person being projected at the appropriate size.
Yeah.
Lots of geekery. Anyway.
Computer, display Fairhaven character, Michael Sullivan.
And she starts tweaking them a little bit.
Yeah, and she gives really, really concrete instructions like,
increase the character's height by 3 centimeters.
And make him more provocative.
Specify.
Give him a more complicated personality.
Specify.
Well, yeah. Given the education of a... Oh, I thought this
third
was nice.
Third year Trinity student.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. I mean, that... Oh, actually, I suppose Dublin would also have a Trinity college.
Yeah.
Because my first thought was Cambridge, but... And I was like, why would you give an Irishman a Cambridge education? But I'm pretty sure there's a Trinity college in Dublin as well.
And in Belfast.
Oh, okay.
That's where I know it from.
Oh, okay. It might be.
More outspoken, more confident, not so reserved. And make him more curious about the world around him.
Make him an entirely different person, essentially. Less facial hair. No, put a facial hair back.
Yeah, I thought that was brilliant. Give him about 2 days worth. Like, that's such a good special effect. Because you just have this actor come in, stand in the same place, like make a Polaroid so you can get the lighting and the positioning right. Or maybe this was... Actually, that's probably it. This was probably filmed at the end.
Mm.
Right? And then the very last shot was, okay, we've got all the shots of him. All right, have a quick shave and stand back there.
And now we need to do that. Yeah.
And now we're done.
Oh, one more thing. Access his interpersonal subroutines, familial characters. Delete the wife.
On the one hand, I didn't really love that she's exercising this control over...
No.
You know, he's not really a person. He's a representation of a person.
This is something that people do on holodecks all the time, you know, especially when they want to get a little nookie going. Mm. Like, they get a perfect holo representation. So I'm not entirely sure if I agree with the doctor's later statement. He's just like I am. Because the doctor has developed himself a personality. And
you're quite right. Well, let's talk about that when we get there.
Okay.
Because... you're right that, like, the holodeck provides a healthy sexual and romantic outlet for people who are interested.
Yeah.
But while sexual fantasies, you know, it's basically like you can look at erotic artwork or write stories or do role-playing together, and this is, you know, things that we're familiar with as personal sexual outlets, and the holodeck is a great version of that because you've also got sensory feedback. And yeah, there it's absolutely valid to just, I want to experience this, I want to experience that. But in romance, you kind of want to be surprised a bit more.
Of course, yeah.
You want the agency of the other person.
But maybe, I mean, I don't think she set out with the idea of romance. She probably just like went like,
I think she did. I think that's what she's here for. She's got a little bit of the hots for him.
Right. And then, but like, you know, there's like not quite the kind of thing that I'm going for. I guess it's just like an immediate physical attraction. Because that's basically what that's like. You change your hair and that's, you know.
Yeah, like this is the angle I like to tilt my chin when I'm kissed.
Exactly. And then I don't think she's initially going there for romance. But we'll come to that. Tuvok is feeling a bit queasy and it's not Neelix's cooking.
I am experiencing a slight loss of equilibrium and some gastrointestinal distress.
Space sickness.
Unlikely. I'm not prone to that condition.
I love that you can see the sort of ion storm through the windows here behind Tuvok.
Kim and Tom are bickering about the fog.
Tom gives these very vivid descriptions of life on the sea, where you've got Harry as a sort of
miming him next.
Mime interpreter, sort of like the waves going up and down.
He's
and
moving
up
his hands, like sway fog drifting in and out. And
then Neelix comes in like,
mutton, creamed cabbage, or blood pudding?
Well, blood pudding, of course.
Traditional, yeah.
Well, I tried that, but standing in front of a vegetarian Vulcan, and they're talking about...
Well, that was my first choice, too, but replicating the lamb's intestines, it could be tricky. And every time I try to heat the blood, it coagulates in the milk.
If you'll excuse me, I think I will consult the doctor.
Back to the Irish village, where Janeway has gotten in the spirit of things.
She's got herself a nice, modest dress.
I wonder if that's the one that she wore in her Victorian fantasy when she was
the right period,
the governess.
Yeah.
And she asks Maggie if she knows where Sullivan is. Well, did you try the pump? Yeah, I just came from there.
Oh, well, then he'll be at the train station.
So it's interesting that if changes are made to a character, those are sort of organically distributed through the rest of the program that the character occupies.
Yeah, that makes sense, yeah.
Yeah, but I think it's cool that it can do that. Yeah. I wonder if then it also would give, like, a conflict. If you delete the wife, okay, that also means that you're deleting these and these and these characters who came from her previous marriage.
Right, yes. I suppose. Okay. He is just sitting there reading his book in that typical look at me sitting here reading a book pose. Like, I am a very interesting person because I am sitting here reading a book.
Holding it very far from my face and, like, posing in such an interesting fashion. And she wanders up under the historically inaccurate finger posts.
Yeah.
Misspelling. Yeah. Killaloo is spelled with O-E at the end. Tungrani. The Irish I can't judge, but... I know that there's an Irish name that when you write it out and see it as an English person inclined to say grainy. I happen to know that it's Gronja.
Ah, okay.
But apparently this place is known as, like, literally the tomb of grainy.
Oh, okay.
We just had a quick look at the clock and we're noticing, like, for an episode where basically nothing happens, we're really going through it with a fine-tooth comb.
Right.
And I kind of dig that because... There's not a lot of action, but, like, action and scientific peril and, like, solving problems and politics, like, that's so run-of-the-mill on Star Trek versus, like, seeing these just organic personal experiences is actually kind of rare. Like, it's usually the minority or it's relegated to a side plot. But something I'm really appreciating here, like, Fairhaven, is an allegory for Voyager itself. Voyager is also like a very close-knit community.
Yeah.
Like, ooh.
Are we back podcasting, or
yeah,
are we?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Sorry. Yeah.
No, this is like, because this came out. Can you check the clock? So I wasn't sure if we were back.
I'm sorry, everyone. Look, normally we'd save this kind of discussion for the end of the episode, but it's occurring to me now. Like, in The Next Generation, it's very plot driven. You know, the Enterprise has those rooms and those places that are necessary for the plot. Deep Space Nine was a marked difference. You know, it has a geography, it has a promenade, and it's a place where lots of people come through.
Yeah.
And Voyager is, well, it's small.
Yeah, the same group. There's no outside interaction, I suppose.
Yeah, exactly. So it is kind of like a small town, a small isolated village.
Where everybody knows we're all friends here. Well, there's some issues here and there. But O'Sullivan, this time, gets to upshow her a little bit.
Do you know Jane Eldon?
Eldon? No, I've never met her.
Well, I'd be terrified if you had. She's been dead 70 years.
You're still catching up to you, yeah. Katie. Like, I almost wonder if Catherine was going to go, computer, pause, make him less of a dick. Make him have read the things that I've already looked. Look in my Kindle library.
Yes. And make sure that the Irish appropriate works that we're going to be talking about those.
Yeah, exactly.
But yes, no, she doesn't do that.
And she says, you know, that she's waiting for the next train to Galway and she's enjoyed this area, but she hasn't been up to the castle yet. And like a person who apparently doesn't have a day job, who apparently doesn't need to be manning his pub right now, he offers to take her there.
Maybe he hasn't opened yet. I don't know. Yeah.
The sun is shining in Ireland.
Fair.
I mean, two things that rarely happen anyway. I was gonna say. The sun is up, then the pub really ought to be open.
So, the sun is shining, then people are like enjoying the summer. Like this year it fell on a Tuesday.
Yes, where everybody had to crack open their Irish dictionary to see what was the word for shadow again. Ooh.
Yes, they do a little walk and talk about going to the castle, which doesn't actually happen, I think, although Tom Paris shows up and they offer to take him along. No, it's Chakotay who shows up, sorry, not Tom.
Yes, who has an appointment in the Ox and Lamb because he's going to try Neelix's cooking there.
Yes.
He calls a captain. There's a nice introduction between Sullivan and Chakotay. You
know? Yes.
Chakotay, I think at this point, has also had some closeness with the captain that's always been bubbling. I think this is after he made her a bath.
So it's interesting that, again, the uniform is completely ignored, but the tattoo isn't.
Yeah. And I really loved how that was presented. Like,
that's a fine tattoo. Are you off a ship?
You could say that.
Yeah.
It's not relevant to the tattoo, but...
And he's invited along, but he declines. And she looks a little bit uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
But Chakotay, very graciously and enthusiastically, as her friend, like, seems that he sees what's going on and he's happy for his friend.
Yes. We never see the trip to the castle because next it is a bridge scene, again with Chakotay and Janeway.
I just came from Astrometrics. Seven's found an increase in the neutronic gradient at the trailing edge of the wavefront. It's going to be a rough ride when it hits.
I love that he comes up with this pad, and instead of sitting in his chair, which is to Janeway's camera right, he sits on the jump seat first, which is sort of casual to discuss that with her. It's amazing how, like, I have to imagine that there has to be a cone of silence around those central seats, because she and Chakotay often have fairly intimate conversations in the middle of a quiet office that nobody else seems to be privy to,
or local dampening.
Yeah.
Tuvok informs us that Vulcans are very sensitive to neurotic gradients.
Neutronic.
I like mine better.
Yeah, I do too. And that's where Tom Paris says one of the quotes that was used as a clue last week for which episode we were going to do.
You'd make a good barometer, Tuvok. Every time you get queasy, we go to red alert.
And here's the sound of Tuvok rolling his eyes.
Yeah.
No, but here comes the conversation with Chakotay and Janeway. She goes, it's not what you think. And he goes, yeah, it totally is. And
yeah,
it rocks.
Yes. You're having a little bit of fun on the side, and I think she should keep doing that.
Yeah. Sure. He teases her a little bit.
Develop,
you know,
her interest in Irish culture a little bit more.
Yeah, I noticed that you made some modifications.
Yes.
And she opens up to him, right?
She does, and I love how it goes at the end, and she's just sitting there just like...
Too bad he's made of photons and force fields.
I never let that stand in my way.
And Chakotay says, I never let that stand in my way.
Yeah.
Oh, you're a holoslut.
Yeah.
Yeah. Attaboy. No wonder he's so emotionally stable.
It's a very healthy prostate, too.
All right, time for some dancing. trad music has its fans and detractors in Ireland itself. And actually, this is one of those things, you know, growing up, I didn't grow up mostly in Ireland, so I wasn't really exposed to that until later in life, and then discovered it through, you know, obviously the Dubliners and similar practitioners. And much later, it occurred to me, like, there are sort of historically reenacted musical styles. You know, there's medieval music that's performed by some people at, like, Ren fairs and the like.
Bardcore,
yeah. Oh, the medieval babes, you know, singer quartets and, like, reconstructions of classical choral performances. But Irish music is not a revival. Like, it's a continual tradition that hasn't been interrupted and, you know, branched into folk. And, you know, I've often said that if I ever get invited into Doctor Who's time machine and he asks me, where do we want to go? I want to go to wherever it was that the first time that an Irish bard heard a guitar. And I just want to see the look on her face.
Yeah.
I said, well, it's so loud. Oh, that's for me.
We can, like, really play over the din in the pub in that, with that one.
Yeah, exactly.
Which just makes the din go louder, but yeah. As opposed to the first time the Hawaiian saw a guitar.
It's too big.
Yeah, no, it needs to be smaller.
Well, it's a great time. It's evocative of... would that have been out yet? Yes, this was in 2000. Titanic was in 99. The excellent, like, Lower Decks dancing scene in Titanic that popularized Irish step dancing jigs in American media.
O'Sullivan is taking Janeway for a little spin, and very quickly...
Computer, remove all characters except for Michael Sullivan.
And he's fine with that.
He doesn't seem to notice. Again, like, one of those things that the computer, like, kind of corrects for, I guess.
Yeah. Which... I mean, it's dream logic, right?
Yeah, totally.
You walk in this door and you're there, you know, give me a shortcut to the castle. I don't feel like the walk. And there you go. Both of them are sort of coming down from the effort and high of dancing. It says, you know.
Would you mind if I kissed you?
I might even kiss you back.
And have a lovely kiss. And then I thought that this was, for me, a real highlight of the episode.
Mm.
We cut to a very dour Janeway in her uniform
and
her poorly lit quarters.
Picking up a stack of books and carrying them over to the replicator to have them recycled.
Yeah, and so. You can see the difficulty of the choice.
Yeah.
Neelix walks in with further suggestions for Fairhaven, which she sort of brushes off.
Yeah, go on, do whatever you want.
Well, let's just say I'd rather stick to reality right now.
He doesn't press her on.
He doesn't. Well, I'm not sure he even catches on. Next time on the holodeck, Seven is killing the rings tournament.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And Seamus has got his little eye on her.
Oh,
yeah. You're right. This must still be Sullivan's because there's the rings.
Yeah.
Because I guess Deep Space Nine had a monopoly on darts.
Oh, okay.
Through Miles O'Brien.
Kim wonders what Seven sees in.
The fullness of your lips. And the paleness of your cheeks, it's enough to make a man faint.
Then in that case, perhaps we should sit down.
Fun will now commence.
Yeah. That's the old world charm, Harry.
And the quartet of Harry, Tom, Neelix, and the Doctor notice Michael Sullivan sitting by himself, drinking.
And Tom's like, hey, that's weird. You shouldn't be doing that. But he's heartbroken.
3 days. The happiest 3 days of my life. I was a fool to think she felt the same.
Yes.
Yeah. Are you sure you didn't misread her intentions? You're calling me a liar.
Yeah.
The traditional Irish overreaction, which... I mean, Harry's even done that thing where he's done the Riker manoeuvre.
You know, yes,
he's
turned, I noticed,
turned the chair backwards and sort of leaning over, which is the international symbol for let's do some real talk, let's rap.
And, well, you know, the Irish temper is shown because it doesn't take long for a fist fight to break out.
Gentlemen, please, love thy neighbour.
Because next we see the Doctor in sick bay treating some injuries.
Still in a smock.
So were the
safety's
safety
off.
Interlocks off, or were the crew punching each other?
Oh, that's a good one. That must be it. Yeah, I read in the trivia as well. Oh, well, we don't know. Why would the safeties be off? No, they took each other's feet and fists and belt buckles in the face. Wow. I mean, he's talking about...
Maybe it was the talking pig. If it was, he had one hell of a left hook.
And you see the Doctor in the back. I wonder if the Doctor sort of goes, that was accidentally me. I was just taking a...
I guess the Doctor has, like, safety interlocks off by default because he needs to be able to...
I mean, he needs to actually, like, cut into people
part
of his job.
Exactly.
So, yeah, making it impossible for him to perform his job.
Yeah.
It's interesting that, like, so the captain comes and investigates.
Yeah.
She's not too judgmental, which I was actually bracing myself for, that she'd, you know, she's made this decision for herself whether she'd be acting out at anyone, but she doesn't. She keeps it entirely to herself. Even the fact that her officers were in a brawl and are injured,
yeah,
she sort of weighs that. Doctor says, no major injuries. Okay, that's acceptable.
Yeah.
It's a one-time occurrence.
But the doctor does cut off Kim when he's...
It was Michael Sullivan, Captain. He was... looking for someone.
Don't do that.
Does the priestly kind of
yeah,
thing.
Yeah, can we like do a little walk and talk? And they must have really put all the corridor elements that they have together.
I was thinking the same thing.
It's an amazingly long shot that they take.
Oh, I wonder if it's a loop.
Well, they start doing cuts at some point, but it was the first part of that walk and talk is of one very long single shot.
Yeah.
And I think they've pretty much looped around by the time that they start doing cuts as they're walking through different corridors. I suspect that the next shot is the same corridor, but now filmed in the opposite direction.
Yep. The little redress, like they've got stickers for numbers on the doors for people who pay attention to that level of detail. Because, you know, Star Trek production designers, as always, and continues to cater to nerds who screen cap everything.
The Doctor starts to question a little bit about what's been going on, because he notices, like, yeah, you made quite a few modifications there.
And she resists and resists and resists until he respects her boundaries and says, well, you know, I'll leave this to you, and if you ever want to, like, talk, I have made a lot of confessions.
Yeah.
And then she grabs him, because she really does want to talk. She actually wanted him to press harder,
She chides him, look, you're starting to pry, Doctor!
I become romantically involved with a hologram, if that's possible.
Tell me what happened.
Oh, you know the story. Girl meets boy, girl modifies boy subroutines.
Did you have intimate relations?
That's none of your business. Let's just say it was a memorable 3 days.
But he expresses genuine concern.
And his interest, this is also such an excellent scene, because he's really concerned for her well-being.
You can't have a relationship with a member of your crew. They're all your subordinates. So where does that leave you? The occasional dalliance with a passing alien?
But you're a red-blooded woman. It's healthy. I mean, there are people for whom the single life is what they prefer. There are people with asexual spectrum is totally a thing. But she's been in relationships before. You know, she had Mark, whom we only briefly see in the pilot episode. Yeah. So, like, companionship and sex are things that she must be missing. And the Doctor has very good advice for that. And she keeps trying to talk herself out of what she's feeling.
Yeah.
So while you're right that the Doctor, you know, he says, he's as real as I am, I think that's much less about, you know, holographic rights.
Right.
And much more about recognizing you're trying to talk yourself out of something that you know is a good idea.
Yeah, fair point.
I've noticed that humans usually try to change the people they fall in love with. What's the difference?
In this case, it works.
I like that this is what she's concerned about. Because yes, that is unhealthy. If you can modify the person that you're in love with, that's not love.
Yep. And as so many times, the relationship, the breaking point is that one partner snores.
Yeah. That's really, really good. That's the moment that she realized what she was doing. And you can see the anger on her face.
Yeah.
This is actually a really good confession as well, where she gets to just express these emotions, that she trusts the Doctor like that. Oh, there's an interesting move when she's trying to walk away.
Yeah.
And he comes running after her, and it's as if he's overtaking her and blocking her with his arm, but he's just pressing the button for the turbo lift for
her. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Right? So it's I don't know. It's really good body language that sets this tone for, hey, I don't want you to run away, but without actually invading her limits. He's doing a great job of reminding her of what you actually need, because he determines that you're not angry that you're modifying him like this. You're disappointed that it's not coming to you naturally.
Right.
Right? You're not letting go. You're not letting yourself be surprised.
Yes. And at the same time, I mean, she's clearly looking for a romantic involvement because, yeah, she's literally talking about, like, am I going to get love back?
But isn't that the risk you always take, hologram or not? All I know is Michael Sullivan was up in that tree shouting your name.
And then she goes, I've never been afraid of taking risks. And she realizes that she's not acting as she ought to, and that's a great thing to realize. And she's left behind with her thoughts. It's time for some more action.
Yes.
It's beautiful. I just don't care about this neutrino wave coming
through. It's gorgeous. Like, it shakes up the ship. They modify the photon relays to get the main deflector dish to blast their way through the corridor.
Oh, we're going
to
need every ounce, every deciwatt of power.
Oh, you're going to have to draw power from the holodeck, but that means we can't run a proper holodeck shutdown, so there's going to be damage to the program.
Whatever that means.
Or something, yeah.
Like even life support.
Well, no save file, you know, it's...
I mean, maybe you've got a page file dump, but it's not the same, is it? I love that she says...
Give them everything we've got. Life support, environmental control. Scrape the residual ions off the sonic showers if you have to.
Yes. Great.
But yes.
And they punch through.
When the storm is over, they are wandering around Fairhaven, which is now leaves strewn all over the place, and there's like the blotchy spots of a holodeck program breaking down all over the place.
Yep. As they would say in Ireland, actually, I don't know how to say this expression without a slur, because it's one of those jokes that diminishes another people group and accuses them of something. So I'm going to say it, and please bleep it out, Chief. There's a gust out there that could knock a tr***er off his cousin.
Oh, oi, oi, oh, wow. Yeah. Oi.
Maybe just bleep out the whole thing, actually. This isn't... And there's Seamus up to his...
You could change it for a... but then it would...
Yeah, okay, let's bleep that one out as well for exactly the same reason. Like, there's just no... historical... Now I understand, Tom, actually. Maybe in the centuries between now and when this takes place, more is discovered and realised about the complexity of Irish history.
Yeah.
And that this, what looks to us like vulgar stereotype, is actually a very sensitive integration of various sensibilities that we're currently not privy to.
Yes. Yeah. Okay, let's go for that.
James wants money again.
I don't suppose you could spare a shilling or two. Yeah, my wife and I made up last night.
They decide, we can probably fix it. We can maybe save 5 to 10% of it. But first he needs to go and have a talk with Janeway, because he needs to know whether or not Sullivan should be maintained or not. That's basically what it amounts to.
Yep. He's not saying it. He's leaving her dignity. And also, like, I really appreciate... This is something that he and the doctor and Harry are all doing.
Uh-huh.
Like, we all know, but we all know that there's a boundary there.
Yeah.
And we're not crossing that boundary, and that's how we show respect.
Yeah.
Right? And therefore you don't have to feel embarrassed about it, because we happen to know, but we know where the boundary
is. Certain things are not talked about, yeah.
Yeah.
She goes back into the holodeck research room and calls up Michael again. This time he doesn't just stand there, but he actually interacts.
You disappeared on me, Katie. I woke up, and you had gone.
And she's...
explains to him that she's going to be gone for a while.
Another man?
No.
Your friends? They don't approve of me?
They think you're charming.
So yes, he just like rattles off a few insecurities. But yes, she goes like, well, I might be back in 6 or 7 weeks.
Because he says, well, I have a feeling you won't be forgetting us that easily.
Yeah. End program... And she makes a final modification.
Deny Catherine Janeway any future access to his behavioral subroutines.
Modification complete.
Which a captain really ought not to be able to do, right? You've got command code override, but I guess it's just like setting up some hurdles.
I guess so, yeah. That's like
to remind herself not to.
Yeah.
To resist that temptation. Leaving the door open for a future adventure in Fairhaven, which we do eventually wind up getting.
6 or 7 episodes later.
Yep, in Spirit Folk, which...
I guess they went to see the fairies?
Oh.
I don't know.
I have some vague memories of it. I don't know. I'm not entirely sure. And that was Fairhaven.
Yes. All right, what do we have
Do you have anything for the...
Captain's log, supplemental.
Yeah, do you have any...
In which we imagine any deleted scenes which might have ended up on the cutting room floor.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think so. That's like there should have been a scene where she goes looking for O'Sullivan again.
Sullivan.
Yep. Sorry. And I think I saw him leaving out there. And as she just like goes wandering onto the moors, she finds Sullivan and a bunch of his friends with shinty sticks practicing military drills to go ransack an English military convoy.
In an amazing twist, I had almost the exact same idea. That in those moments where like all the Starfleet officers leave, then suddenly all the sort of cheer leaves the town. Are they gone? All right.
Back to the resistance planning.
Right? Because they realize these foreign invaders have taken advantage of us long enough, and they've been building up to an armed revolution. They've actually been sort of prepared. They've looked at the consoles. They know how to summon them. The bar fight was just a test whether the safeties were off. Yeah, successful. So that's going to work. And they were just on the edge of armed rebellion when the neutron storm saved Voyager's life.
Fantastic. I am so down with that.
Well, with that, let's see what the chief has in store for us next time, because we always get some clues. We've got a bunch of them this time.
And we'll try to see which episode, if we can guess which the next episode is going to be.
Our pod kitty, who's been very, very good lying on my lap, is now in bite and fight mode.
Do you need an extraction?
I think it'll be okay, just as long as we'll be fine. As long as I sit very, very still. Her vision is based on movement.
Yes.
Okay, first clue.
Archer says, "This is a vessel of exploration, not a cargo ship. We don't do any commerce."
Okay,
so Archer, Star Trek Enterprise.
Yeah.
Tripp says, "Just because a guy's in his underwear, you think the worst."
Okay.
I'm into it. Whatever it is, I'm into it.
Archer says, "Trust me, she's got no sense of humor. She's always complaining."
That's about to pull, I suppose.
Oh, is it? Oh, I'm starting to have an idea.
Okay.
Archer says, "What's your wife worth? 5 bars of gold? Maybe 6? Let them take her. I'll give you 10.
Oh, okay.
Okay, bars of gold. Not gold-pressed platinum, I notice.
No.
Interesting.
Don't be so sure. Look at the size of its ears."
What? I was thinking precious cargo, but...
Yeah, or one of those episodes where they, you know, transport a whole group of people and trying to keep them in limbo, but that's an enterprise... That's a next
that's
generation
a next generation
episode,
thing, yeah. They didn't have... Let's see one more.
T'Pol says, "There are times I wish Vulcans hadn't learned to repress their violent tendencies."
Whoa!
Oh, wow. I'm fairly certain I've not seen this episode.
I've got no clue either, so let's find out.
The episode is Enterprise, Season 1, Episode 19, Acquisition.
Oh, it's with Ferengi.
Oh,
of course.
Very nice.
How much is your wife worth?
Yes.
Oh, this is I'm looking forward to that.
All right.
Well, Chief, can you put the sound clip here? The one that we talked about?
The hell is this?
I'm leaving Fairhaven.
Energize!
We hope you've enjoyed this week's episode with your friends Kay and Cocky. Production and editing by your chief engineer Greg, and music by Fox Amore. Join us next time for Enterprise Season 1, Episode 19, Acquisition. Visit joyoftrek.com/links to send us your recommendations, support us on Patreon, or to find us on Twitter. We'd love to hear from you. Thank you for listening to The Joy of Trek, and we'll see you out there.